The following program is paid for by Little John Financial Services. The opinions and views expressed may not reflect those of Brook Communications, its affiliates, or its employees.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now presented by Little John Financial Services. It's David Little John with True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, you know what time it is. It is time for the True Wealth Radio Show on this greatest Tuesday you have had all week. I'm your host, Dave Little John, joining me in studio today.
Matt Dixon.
I got to think about it. That is how much prep we've had. What's my name again? Oh, boy.
Normally, I write that down, you know. Matthew.
It's, you know, we've considered tattoos, but he's not a needles guy.
You know, I actually, back in college, considered getting tattoos. Like, the thought of a needle, like, piercing my... Nope, hate it. But, you know, I was a math major, right? And so I was constantly dealing with numbers, and there's lots of these really super complex equations where you got to remember a bunch of stuff. And I'm like, you know, you could just tattoo it on your arm. They'd have a really hard time saying you were cheating if it's on your skin. Like, would they require me to take and put on a long sleeve shirt to take a test? Or you just like flip your forearm up and boom, there's the equation.
Even better, what if you printed a t-shirt with all of the equations all over the t-shirt so everybody could share? And you'd be like, what? It's just my notes shirt.
Yeah, I'm like turning my shirt around in the middle of class.
Or even more clever than that, everything's backwards on it, but you bring a mirror.
Wow, that's a lot of work, but I like where your mind's at.
Yeah, you know, I'm just saying, where were these ideas when you needed them, though, right? Instead, you had to actually learn it.
And now we live in a world where it's like, well, the computer just will spit it out for you.
I know. A kid looks at it and says, I think you meant this. And you just go, uh-huh.
Right?
It's crazy. Funny. The computer magic these days is really something.
Mm-hmm.
This, by the way, if you're wondering, how is this possibly relevant to the show? 100% relevant to the show today.
Yeah.
So, Matt, I'm going to start this out by... First of all, everybody needs to know this. Matt is super well prepared today. He has been prepping for weeks for this specific show. He's unaware that he was prepping for weeks for this show, but I am setting him up in a great way.
Good.
Because you seem to be, is the term obsessed a fair term right now for market research right now?
Yeah, it really is true. When I have free time, I'm constantly reading about where is this world headed and what's it going to look like and what are the companies that are going to build it out, because I have a theory that things are going to be very, very, very different in the next 3 to 5 years.
So here's what we have to preface this show with. Everything that you're about to get is specific, actionable, do it now investment advice. I'm kidding. None of that is actually the case. We are going to talk about the way that the markets are, I mean, they're fascinating right now. So first of all, explain to me, I'm going to interview you a little bit. We don't normally do this as much, but I'm going to have fun with this. So what has got this bug like in your ear right now? Why are you so driven around this?
I mean, for personal gain, first and foremost, like not first and foremost, I guess it's also part of our job, right?
It turns out you can want personal gain. That's allowed.
I mean, I think that you make some good investments in this AI wave, then I think you could stand to make a lot of money. And we also do this for our clients, right? Like, this is our job. If we do really, really, really well, like, word's going to get out.
It's funny. Matt and I are taking very different approaches to how we're doing market research today.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, that's maybe not fair. I think we're doing some similar things and some things that are very different.
Yeah.
Right. I think we're both starting with using a lot more artificial intelligence as the root of how to query the market for information.
Yeah, I look at this as I'm just a bump on a log, right? Like, I'm not a super smart person. There are people that are infinitely smarter than I am. But what I do have is I have AI systems that can, if prompted correctly, like give me an outline of everything that's happening in real time in the world. And I might not understand it fully, but what it's allowing me to do is to kind of look behind the veil of like, where is AI moving? Where are the markets moving? Where is it possibly headed? And try and stay really current and up to date with what's going on right now. And I think that's a big advantage for people who are using it correctly.
Okay. And what is your hope? with this?
My hope is to be an early adopter of the companies that start to explode if, and I'm putting an asterisk there because I've talked to people. There are a lot of people that think AI will fall flat on its face, that revenue won't follow it, and that it'll be a huge waste of money. Like venture capital is just going to get crushed by it because they don't think that AI will get adopted, right? They think that it'll ultimately fail and that we'll still be stuck in a more analog system. There are a lot of people that believe that. I don't necessarily agree with it. I think that we are at a turning point where corporations, big corporations, are looking at this and they're saying, well, how do we change profit margins for our business? How do we go from 20% margins to 40% margins? Adopt AI, become more efficient, more streamlined, lower the amount of employees that you need, and still do the same job but better. And so I think that that's going to continue to get adopted, and I think big companies want to get to the forefront of it, and I think it's a race. And everyone's willing to try and outspend each other to win the race.
Okay. So we have the AI financial arms race. Mm-hmm. It's one of your theories here.
Yep.
Help me understand. And again, he's prepped for this without being prepped for this, right? Matt's version of prep today is I've been reading a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
The not prepped part is he doesn't know the questions I'm about to ask.
I don't.
This is going to be fun for me.
You're about to get
explain
a lot of crickets.
Explain to me how what you're doing is investing and not speculating.
It is really kind of a very fine line between the two, right? There is a lot of speculation that goes into this because you have to try and guess at the direction that we're headed, right? You have to make some assumptions like, do I think space will be profitable? You have to start asking big questions like that. Or is...
When you say space, are you literally talking about space, like SpaceX kind of thing? Or do you mean like the area of the market, the category?
The category of like space stocks. Like, is that area going to be profitable, right? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of assumptions that you have to make. And there's kind of some context that you have to go into this with. So your question was, am I speculating or investing? I think that you can kind of do both at the same time, right? Because if you find a company that you really believe in long term, and you look at their mission, you look at their product, and everything checks out to you, and you are investing, because in my instance, I'm not looking to ever sell these positions. This is something where it's going to be like, I want to buy this and hold it for 10 years and see where it goes. I just want to get in really, really early before the train leaves the station. And so it's investing with a good dose of speculation. Okay. Does that answer it?
So... it's like it's such a politician's answer, right?
Mm.
I didn't answer
I've
the
trained
question.
For this my
I
whole
just
life.
Kind of answered both questions. I just said like, so is it investing or speculating? And you said, I'm like, wait a second here, because I tend to go for more affirmative understandings, right? Mm-hmm. And the truth of the matter is, one won't know until after. I do think that there is a degree of investing where you're looking at trends and trying to place money. And I don't see you day trading these things. I do think you're trying to put yourself in a position to say, no, I want the thing that's going to really be gaining traction mm-hmm. and be an early adopter.
Right.
And I do think that is it's an aggressive investment strategy.
It is.
I don't think it's a trading strategy. So in that respect, I'm going to
the risk
align.
Is quite high though, right? Like, because most of these small companies or, you know, companies that are kind of just starting out, a lot of those companies fail. And
well,
I think
it's not just speculation on the company right now. It's speculation on the trend.
It's true.
You know, we really don't have a sense of where things are going to go.
Right. And I've talked about it before. You've heard me say, like, I think quantum computing is going to be massive. That's a speculation, I guess, when it comes down to it, because they mean they could fail. It could be something that doesn't really roll out full scale. Could be more of like a...
It could end up being niche-y supercomputer stuff.
Yeah, it could be. It could.
You know, because maybe the cost benefit's not there.
You want to know why I think that it will go big, though? Because I think evil, at the end of the day, tends to surface. And like if I'm... Say I'm a truly evil person with a lot of power. I would want quantum computing, right? Because what does a quantum computer give me? It gives me the ability to hack into systems, right? Like, in theory, if quantum computing progresses at the trajectory that everyone says that it will, hacking bank accounts, hacking government data. And so it allows you to manipulate things, and like cryptocurrency becomes at risk. There's a lot of things it allows you to do. And that's why I'm investing in it, because I think that evil people are always going to try and be evil, and that governments are going to want to be more secure. Banking systems are going to want to be more secure. So there's going to be a huge spend to try and get to the front of the line to be able to protect yourself and protect assets from people that could get it in the wrong hands.
You know, it's fascinating because there are some, what I see is some fairly low tech but straightforward solutions to managing banking. It does slow it down because quantum computing, again, we're kind of, for our listeners, let me give you guys just a quick catch up. The thing that's concerning about quantum computing is that it's able to process code at a speed that we're not used to.
Right. And here's the crazy thing. You just mentioned that. Speed with coding that's unfathomable. We used to have people that were sitting behind a computer writing code. Now the computers are writing the code. And that's the thing that I think a lot of people are sleeping on, is Anthropic is super powerful with its coding ability. And so if it can code really, really fast, imagine what a quantum computer can do now that it knows how to code.
Well, I'm not so sure that they're doing the same thing at this point. It just happens to be very adept at breaking cryptography, right? Which is the way that codes are generated. It happens to be very good at code breaking as a particular style of computing. It doesn't necessarily mean it's good at everything.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, you know, there are different specialized computers for different reasons, right? GPUs are different than CPUs. They process in different ways, and so they have different benefits in the computer world. I don't even know how all of it works. I just know that there are different reasons for different architectures.
Yeah.
It's fascinating to think about the kind of speed and horsepower that quantum computing could potentially deliver, though.
Yeah, I actually think it's, for most people, including myself even, it's almost beyond my realm of, like, understanding. Because I've tried to understand it, and I'm like, when you get into qubits and you start looking at stuff on an atomic level, that's really, really
right.
Wild to me.
Well, again, I kind of use it as described as more like directional movement than it is about yes or no.
Mm-hmm.
And so you start to see things that can compute in three-dimensional space instead of two-dimensional space, or really
right.
One-dimensional space if it's just a zero or a one.
Mm-hmm.
That ability to handle data in that stream is just really a lot faster in certain elements than in others, right? With combinations in particular, it's like, well, let's try all the combinations at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And you go like, well, how do you do that? So, well, quantum computers do that.
Right.
And you go, that doesn't make any sense. You have to try one at a time in order. It's like, well, no, you do if you have a combination lock and you can only flip one number at a time. But if you can see all of the numbers at the same time, just check them all. And so it's like, oh, well, that would be different.
Yeah.
It doesn't necessarily mean that cryptography is in trouble. Like cryptocurrency is not automatically in trouble for that.
Right.
But the scarier part is, well, you could potentially get a handful of networked supercomputers that would be capable of such horsepower that, you know, oh, we have 500,000 machines sharing the load on this one. It's like, well, we have a dozen over here and they can actually outperform 500,000 machines.
That's the
and
crazy
you just think,
part.
Wait, that could really happen?
Yes.
Yeah, crazy enough, that could really happen.
Mm-hmm.
So, we all thought non-fungible tokens and Bitcoin was secure and all that. Well, with today's technology.
Yeah, I mean, even if you had asked me a year ago, what do you think about self-driverless technology? I'd have been like, nope, not possible. Like, I didn't actually think that they'd roll that out and be able to make it really work. But with quantum computing and the way that AWS has been able to start routing their shipping lanes and stuff, I'm like, start throwing all this stuff together, quantum,
the crazy thing is,
AWS, all of it.
It doesn't require quantum computing right now.
No, it doesn't. That's the crazy thing. No, it
doesn't. I mean, that's way more horsepower than is needed. But maybe if you wanted to route
all of New York City in real time.
In a city, then that would be like, oh, well, we could do that, no sweat.
That's where I'm like, 3 to 5 years.
Okay. Well, we've got to talk. Speaking of 3 to 5 years, we're already 3 to 5 minutes
okay.
over. So let's grab a break here. We'll do that. When we come back, we're going to continue this conversation. What's the future potentially looking like, and how do we position ourselves as investors? Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
And you got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang. Welcome back to the True Wealth Radio Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
All right. So we are just getting we're running like way behind already. You're going to have to grab the podcast to get caught up. We're talking about the markets today. And if you ever watch these stuff, you know, we're not streaming live today, but it'll get posted on YouTube later. You can watch the stuff at the breaks and you can have our take on Star Wars. And apparently my take on one directional time travel.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was a good one.
we'll cover that another time. So anyway, Matt, we're exploring the idea of how these markets are all shaping up, mm-hmm. I guess I want to try to get a sense of where do you think things are going? Like all you've said so far to our listeners is like, well, everything's going to change in the next 3 to 5 years.
Right.
And so lay out, and we're just for funsies, right? This is not investment advice or anything else, but just for funsies, what do you think are some of the things that we should look for 3 to 5 years from now that are genuinely different than today?
I think that we've all kind of felt it a little bit, right? Like the rise in energy prices, that's been a real thing.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that we're going to continue to see higher and higher demand for energy output as the world continues to lean more into AI and rely on it. So I think that energy is going to continue to be a cornerstone of where the economy is looking to try and find advantages in. So, and technology is really changing that too. You know, we've seen like new technology where you can go to like you know how they leach natural gas off and they burn it off
mm-hmm.
when they're, yeah. So I could see that technology that they have where they're using what was a wasted resource and then burning that to then generate electricity.
Yeah, we already know there are companies doing this
they
now.
Are. Yeah, so I could see that trend continuing and getting bigger and bigger because why not take something that we're just kind of burning off and wasting and then turning that into energy? I could see that trend continuing. I think that AI is going to continue to take a bigger and bigger swath of the S&P. I know it's already a huge portion of it, but I could see that continuing.
So I've made this case before, and I'm curious your take on it, that we may not actually see tech ever be a lower percentage of the S&P than it is now, but that what we will do is start to redefine sectors.
I do believe in that.
And parse it more and more. Like tech is just too broad to say tech, right? It's like, well, but Google is a type of tech that's different from Anthropic. So why are we lumping them all into the category of tech? Why not, you know, break them out into
like, hey, there's a semiconductor portion of the market.
And the subsectors like become sectors themselves.
Yeah, the software section of the index. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I could see that. That would be one that I think is pretty feasible.
That, or we see that the S&P 500 as an index ceases to be the dominant, or maybe it's not dominant, but it ceases to be a play that indexers should gravitate toward. Right? I mean, can we talk about that for a second? I think that's really relevant for our listeners right
now. Say it one more time, because I got sidetracked on my next point. Go.
Okay, so the S&P 500 has been a real go-to for institutional investors and for people that are indexers.
Yeah.
And it's been a really challenging index to outperform.
Oh, I think those days are changing, though.
Well, yeah, my concern is that it's so top-heavy now. You know, you look at it, and it's just a handful of stocks that represent so much of the market capitalization of that index that you're no longer getting a diverse swath of the marketplace.
No.
You're getting a concentrated position here. And what it, you know, used to be, I'm getting 500 stocks, and what we're doing is we're just putting our finger on the scale by the index overweights the companies that are fastest growing.
Right. And now the top 10 biggest companies make up over 40% of the index. That just crested this week.
Yeah, that's really troubling to me when an index starts to look like that. And I could see us, in order to de-risk, and I'm talking about concentration risk, right?
Okay.
We have concentration risk. It's another way of describing that would be idiosyncratic risk. Like an individual stock that blows up and it takes the thing down. Mm-hmm. Systemic risk is when like everything goes down at the same time. You know, tax policy affects everything.
I feel like NVIDIA right now is that company because it is. They're feeding the entire AI ecosystem in one way or another. They have their hand in all these other companies. And if NVIDIA were to have a huge meltdown internally where something went really awry, it's like, well, the whole global AI infrastructure almost immediately overnight pukes one up.
Yeah, it could be significant.
Yeah.
So we look at that, and that's an example of the system risk that's heavily biased to a single stock now,
mm-hmm.
and it represents a really large portion of the S&P 500. Now, are you still diversified? Yeah, I think technically speaking you are. You know, you still have the equivalent
of... The other 60%.
Well, right.
Yeah.
Even 10 stocks with a concentration of 40% doesn't mean you're not diversified.
Right.
It just means you're less diversified than you've ever probably been in generations.
Mm-hmm.
And so might we see scenarios where we are parsing different ways to look at the index to reintroduce some diversification into it because we don't want that much concentration risk? Because you're right, NVIDIA is also highly correlated with other areas of the market. So if NVIDIA gets taken out, then, well, what about Microsoft, which is a major investor in OpenAI, which is one of the biggest customers of NVIDIA, right?
Right, this, exactly.
These are not distant second-order connections. They're very mm-hmm. closely connected and highly correlated. So I don't know that we're getting a lot of beneficial diversification in those indexes right now.
Yeah.
And that is just a cause for concern. You know, the indexers out there are going to defend it mm-hmm. for whatever reason. Say, no, it's reflective of the economy. That's what's happening. And keep in mind that all of these large institutions that are having people putting more and more money into their pension plans and so mm-hmm. forth continue to support those stocks because that money flows to the index. It's an underlying bid for those positions, right?
Yeah.
And that's something I would like to maybe come back around to if we have time, is the concept of the bid in the market. But anyway, I just wanted to flag that for all of our listeners that we are at historically high concentration levels in the S&P 500. And so it's less diversified
yeah.
than you may think it is. It sounds diversified. There's 500 stocks in there. Yeah, but it's not walking and talking like there's 500 stocks there.
Yeah, that is, I think, a big red flag for where we're currently at. And I think one of the other kind of red flags would be the consumer as a whole, right? Like, I think consumers are just swamped in debt, and I think they're kind of at a breaking point because they've just taken on more and more responsibility and, you know, in the form of repayments. And I think eventually that starts to really crack when you have the combination that we do today. You have high rates, right? The rates are higher. And on top of that, inflation. The inflationary numbers today drove the market, at least that's what they claim. Mm-hmm. Inflation looked pretty pesky, and so the market had a little bit of a down day. I think the inflationary thing, consumer debt, I think consumer retail could have a really long road to recovery. You asked me, like, what are some changes in the future?
Mm-hmm.
I think retail could be dead for a while, like multiple years on end.
Okay.
I'm not trying
to corner you on this one, but I am asking for clarity because, you know, retail being dead, that sounds pretty awful. It sounds pretty fatalistic, right? You use the word dead. What does that mean? Just flat? No growth? Like, negative? It shrinks? You know, what does that mean?
Well, if you just look at a lot of the companies in the retail space, Nike's a perfect example. That stock has been beat up since, 2022? It hasn't gotten mm-hmm. a lift in 4 years. You look at all these companies. Look at Duluth. They are trading at, 30, and they're down to, $2 a share. Retail has been hammered on, and a lot of, especially, on the clothing side of retail, you know, the auto manufacturers have still been selling stuff, but their prices have hit an extreme to where I think a lot of people aren't going to be buying that $100,000 truck.
Here's the question, though.
Yeah.
So retail stock prices haven't moved. How's the profitability for the companies?
I mean, I think the profitability has been bad, too. I mean,
yeah, I don't have the answer off the top of my head, but let me explain.
Because storefronts are expensive. Like Ulta was a perfect example of that. Mm-hmm. They were having massive problems with theft. storefronts are expensive, right? A lot of companies have been trying to go to all online sales. And so retail has been hammered because employees are expensive, real estate is expensive, and then you tack on high rates and trying to, you know, refinance your money and move money around in a higher rate environment. That's brutal on these companies.
Well, it's fascinating because, you know, rates have been higher, but real estate prices at the commercial have been falling,
mm-hmm.
especially in urban areas, just because you've had so much destruction of demand.
Yep.
Post-COVID, we never really saw the recovery.
No.
A lot of stores have just said, you know what, if we're not gonna have governments enforce the rules and we cannot have inventory control, then we're going to leave the places where it's egregious, right?
Yeah.
So you're seeing like downtowns and cities just shutting down. Like the property values are cratering because of that. So it's interesting to see that those are natural market responses.
Mm-hmm.
That
do you see that getting better? I see it continuing to kind of just get worse.
The jury is a little bit out. I think that.
I mean,
I think that you're going to see pricing adjust. I mean, if it's not profitable to keep stores open, companies don't.
Right.
It's that simple. The reason I brought up the question about profitability is I'm not convinced that the market is awarding retailers by profits as much as it has in the past. It seems that
sheer
investors,
volume. They're just,
well, you know, just investors are just enamored by the AI story. And
mm-hmm.
so they would rather pay 100 times earnings to get an AI company than they would to pay 15 times earnings for a retail company, which
yeah.
is just wild to me because it's those multiples, you know, you're paying a lot more as an investor for earnings in the AI space. And you're really seeing the term priced to perfection here.
Mm-hmm.
So speaking of, we're doing it again. We're already running long. We're running out of time on this show.
Oh, no, no, no. You gave me something good there.
Yeah, no,
hang on to it.
You hang on to this. We're coming back. I promise I'm giving Matt the opener when we come back because everybody, they want to hear you, Matt.
I know.
I can hear them pounding their dashboards right now on the drive going like, come on, I want to hear it. Stick around. We'll be right back. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Gold is just pouring in the pockets.
It turns out there's an old expression that the markets can remain irrational longer than you can remain solvent.
It's true.
So there you go. Welcome back to the True Wealth Show. Dave Littlejohn in studio with
Matt Dixon.
Okay. Matt?
Yeah.
We were talking about PE ratios, and you wanted to make a point, and so the mic is yours.
Mm, yeah, basically you were talking about how, you know, a company with 100-to-1 ratio, like that's hard to justify because there has to be a ton of growth. And then you mentioned there are some companies that have these really low PE ratios that might look more attractive. And I was saying right after, you know, we were in the break, I was like, if anyone, you would know that like I'm stringent on those PE ratios. I don't like to pay a premium. But I can now kind of make a case in this market where I think that AI is going to radically change profitability in companies, that some of these companies that trade at a really high ratio, I can actually see a path forward for a lot, not a lot of them, but for some of them to actually grow into that and exceed it, simply because I think that their profit margins are going to look immensely different than what we've seen in the past. Because in the past, we used to see companies with 30 to 40% margin, and we looked at that and we're like, that's amazing. But I think with AI eating jobs and being able to kind of, you know, agents being able to run themselves, what if you can have a huge trillion-dollar company with hardly any employees that provides a service that's digital, and now you're looking at margins of 60 to 70%? And a lot of people would be, that's not even possible. But I do think that it is. Given the future and given where this thing is headed, I think you could see a trillion-dollar company with 60 to 70% margins, and people were buying it with 100 or 150 PE ratio. And it's like, well, it keeps going up, one, because of greed, and two, because you bought the company when they were a $2 billion company, and they're well on their way to being a trillion-dollar company.
Okay. So that sounds plausible. Now I'm going to ask you to do the Socrates thing, right?
Okay.
Now you got to argue the other side of it. What would make you wrong?
What would make me wrong? There, I do think, let me put an asterisk in this, and it's going to sound like a politician answer. I do think along the way that you're going to see some hurdles thrown at this thing, right? Because and we talked about this earlier in the show. I think people underestimate how big the American consumer is to the market. Like, if people aren't spending or people aren't buying homes, if the American consumer doesn't purchase things, that right there is like the big hammer that comes in and starts to shatter things, because the American consumer is what's driving the market. The company has to sell a product, it has to sell a service, and if people tighten up their billfolds and they quit spending, that throws a huge wrench into things. And I think we are at kind of a breaking point with the discretionary spending. So that could be a hiccup that could slow down the AI spending, right? Like, if the economy is slow, the jobs market is bad, that could be a cause for things to look ugly for a little bit. War is another big one. Like, if China invades Taiwan and you can't get the chips, like TSM isn't supplying 80% of the world's chips, well, you can't really build the things anymore, can you? And then everyone freaks out and panic sells. So I could see war or a huge slowdown in GDP causing the AI boom to dry up overnight.
Okay. I'm in the studio smiling at Matt, and he's giving me the look like, what is he going to do?
Yeah. How are you going to twist this one around?
Well, I'm
agree
not gonna...
or disagree. 100% agree, 100% disagree. Those are your only two options.
Great.
we're doing a hot take.
Disagree.
Okay. Yes. I like this. This is good. Our listeners want to hear the disagree.
Right. Here's the disagree. First, I think that there's a cart before the horse thing.
Okay.
Right. I think that what we tend to look for is a justification for market behavior, and we misplace the justification.
Okay.
Here's what I mean. Oh, because of the PE ratio, or because GDP is slowing down, therefore this behavior occurs. Is it that, or this behavior occurred and therefore GDP slowed down? Now, I'll
explain that.
I'll explain it this way. I think that in the short term, we see a lot more prom voting than anything else,
mm-hmm.
especially in the AI space.
Yeah.
It's a popularity contest. Who are we crowning today?
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to win the popularity contest? And you know what? Tomorrow we're going to do it all over again. And what we really have is these scenarios where companies get a good story. And what we do is we take the story today and we take all of the future earnings and we pull them into today in our mind emotionally.
Mm-hmm.
And then we justify buying something when the numbers aren't really there, traditionally speaking.
Mm-hmm.
With the hope that the company's story will pan out as described and Cinderella will go to the ball and will meet the prince and everything will be great. And so all we have to do is find that opportunity early and hang on to it, and then we're going to go to the ball too.
Right.
And what's happening is the company has not delivered on any of these promises. It's just made promises and told them in a story fashion,
mm-hmm.
that was palatable to speculators.
I had this happen to me. So what I've been doing is I've been pitting different AIs against each other and saying, you know, you have to get this right. What stocks would you buy today and be an early adopter of? And I had like almost all of them tell me this one particular stock. And I started looking at the financials on the business and I started looking at like what they were offering. And no matter how I spun it, I couldn't get behind it because it just seemed like hype to me. I'm like, you don't really have a product. You're in a really competitive space. You have a big disadvantage because you can't outspend the company that's bigger than you. And even though everything has hype behind the name, I don't buy the story. So I'm like, I'm going to pass even though all signs are pointing to buy this thing.
Yeah. Well, that's the issue, right? Is it wasn't a good enough story for you.
It's true.
And so that's the part that concerns me, is that we have a storyteller's market right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of speculation on what happens.
Yep.
So when you say, for example, hey, what if we had these high PE companies? Now, I'm just playing devil's advocate for a minute here, right? This is not to throw you under the bus at all, because I think there's some credence to what you're discussing. But here's the flip side and the danger side of it, that the market, I don't think, is handicapping well right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that is great. Everybody jumps on board this thing and the price rockets for a minute because the popularity contest.
Absolutely.
But the story doesn't pan out.
Mm-hmm.
Or worse than that, the story does pan out, but there's no protective moat. And now you have companies that are capable of being run by a handful of employees. And so what capital gets protected? If you can start an AI company, why not start a similar AI company that does the exact same thing?
Mm-hmm.
What exactly, how are you going to protect this mysterious intellectual property? How are you going to make the craft so remarkable that only you can do it with only a handful of employees?
Right. And that's one of the reasons I haven't been buying a lot of these, like, I can't really name them on air, but there's some companies that just produce stuff that doesn't have any tangible, like, asset behind it. And so the companies I've been targeting are the ones that are, like, making a product that sells, right?
Yeah, or making a thing that's genuinely hard for somebody else to make.
Right. And so the way I analyze it, and I'm probably going to botch this, is so I went back and I said, what are the companies that really took off in the dot-com bubble? Mm-hmm. And what did they have that were way different than anyone else, right? And so you look at Microsoft. They changed the way that we do business. And then you look at, like, Meta, for example. They changed the way that people kind of communicate. And so Apple, same story. They changed communication with the phone. So look and find a product that's going to change large scale how people interact or do business. And then those are the things that are the ones that I want to own. So, and I also look at and say, is the company making any money? Because like you said, it's only a story. Like if a company is just hemorrhaging cash and they don't have any sales, that's a, you got to be willing to really gamble at that point.
Yeah.
I want a company that's
a company that can actually generate revenue. That's different.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's burning money too, but is it actually increasing the revenue generation?
Mm-hmm.
So the spend is like a reinvestment that's starting to pay off. There are companies that, you know, Tesla was pre-revenue. I mean, you go back and listen to our past shows, and I really dogged Tesla a lot. It had no PE ratio because it was not making money.
Yep. There's only one company right now I'm buying that isn't making
that's
money.
Pre-revenue.
Yeah, there's only one. I can only, you know me, I don't like to gamble too much.
Yeah, and we're not, and you know, we're not going to say it on air anyway.
Nope.
That's one of those where, yeah, call Matt later after class if you're curious, I guess. Although you're still not going to get individual stock recommendations out of us. It's just not how we operate as advisors. But as money managers, we do look for these things. It's really tough because generating alpha is what we call this, right? How do you create outperformance when the indexes perform so well?
Yeah.
And the answer is really selective opportunities. A lot of the time you kind of do own the index because you can't afford to miss it significantly, but you're still looking for these subtle things that you can do to squeeze more out of your investment strategy. Tax efficiency, that's a huge one, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to suggest timing the market, but there are times when it's advantageous to rebalance. Oh, we're on a soft period of time. Let's go ahead and take a rebalance because we have some winners and some losers, and it's time to sort of reshuffle the cards. Those are things that they actually are timing decisions, but they're also trigger point decisions.
Right.
It's not necessarily made by the market's timing. It's made by objective achieved, right? Go ahead and let's reshuffle where the risk is proportioned in the strategy.
Yeah.
So that's the kind of stuff that we deal with. Matt, look at the clock.
No way. Are we really on our last one?
We got to take the last
break. When we get back, are we just going to tell everyone how they can
all
knock this thing out of the park?
All of the secrets.
And then we're going to charge them $40 a month to be able to get the access.
Well, all right. Matt's got a plan I don't know about, but we'll figure it out when we get back. Stick around. I'm Dave Littlejohn.
And Matt Dixon.
You got True Wealth on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4.
on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
All right, gang, welcome back to the home stretch of the True Wealth Show. Matt, with the last few minutes here that we have our audience's attention, you promised to reveal all of the secrets, everything.
Yeah, I wanted to sound like one of those commercials where they're like, okay, we made everything sound really good. We never named anything. And here's the part where you whip out your credit card and pay us, and then we'll send you those stocks.
Of course. Yeah. Of course. Yeah. This is our shady stock list.
Yeah.
No, we're not going to pull that
unethical
stuff.
Capitalists.
Okay. There we go. Now, so the real trick here, I guess I've been asking, so AI is kind of your... that's what's going to change the world.
Yep.
Position on this. Tell me one thing that you think specifically is going to be different 5 years from now.
I'll go down a list. I think that the self-driverless technology will continue to get bigger and bigger and bigger. I do think that space is going to start to see a lot of cell phone stuff being routed to a satellite. So the low Earth orbit, that whole space, I think, is going to get just jammed full of satellites for different reasons. It's not just going to be for your cell phone.
I've said this before. Space Force will have an actual reason for existing. Everybody that's been thinking it's a joke.
No.
Like, nope, I think we're going to need to police the traffic.
Oh, yeah. I think that that whole section is going to grow. I could see Space Force being one of the largest branches of the U.S. military, given time.
Well, and the strange thing about it, if you just think about operations to clean up small debris that could damage really expensive satellites.
Yeah.
That's not out of the question.
No. I hadn't even thought about that, but you're right. Waste management is really now up in space.
Waste management in space. There we go. So,
yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, anyway, what satellite is that? Oh, yeah, that's the garbage collector. It comes by every Tuesday.
So that's funny. But, yeah, I think that... the one thing I'm not looking forward to, if I'm being honest, is I don't really want to deal with, like, you know how you call someone and you can kind of get stuff done? I think that you're going to just call an AI agent, and they're going to walk you through everything. You want to book a hotel, you want to do this, you want to do that. You're not really talking to people anymore, and that makes me sad. I like talking with people because sometimes you can haggle a good deal.
Right. Well, so, there you go.
Yeah.
It's fascinating that I think the people that can ask the best questions are going to be the ones that end up using the technology best.
You know, the other one I'm not looking forward to, wild one here. I do think that we see the currency disappear in paper form. I think everything becomes a digital currency, and that would make me really sad to not have dollars to interchange, like physical money.
Now,
I could see the government saying...
What, let's play the devil's advocate on this one, too, now.
Okay.
What would keep that from happening?
The people in government keep being people of the people, and they actually, like, want you to be able to not be, like, toggled on and off.
See, I think that it's politically useful to leave it around. I think that the black market economy is part of what makes politics spin. And so
interesting.
Whole idea, let's be real. I mean, almost everybody listening, regardless of your political persuasion, you have to be radical to suggest that you shouldn't have an ID to vote. Like, you really do. You have to be very extreme in the position that you're taking. And you know what? Prove me wrong. The position that you're taking is that, well, no, that's disenfranchising or that's somehow racist or something. It's like that. You're taking that position specifically because it benefits your political tilt.
Yeah.
That would be why you're taking it. For everybody else, the idea of securing a vote, if it means keeping people that shouldn't vote out, that's what it means. And if you're saying, well, what about the people that should? Who doesn't have ID?
Right?
You can't use a credit card.
You can't even function in society without it.
So this to me is a really false argument. And so when you get into those scenarios, like, well, that's the same reason we have this argument, because it's politically expedient. The same way we say, well, are we going to stop illegal immigration? So, well, we could be very aggressive and stop it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, enough of it that it would really change the economy. We don't, because there's still political ramifications associated with it.
Well,
and so that black market economy, I think, is a very powerful incentive, and we don't want it to just evaporate.
Interesting.
I know it's kind of a it's a darker take on things, but it's like, you know, I'm
like
very,
I'm
sort of skeptical that the government is willing to do the hard stuff. I think it's like, well, no, we want to make sure that we still have some of that slush in there, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's
they don't mind a little rounding error to keep things crooked.
I think that if you got rid of the black market economy, that it would actually break other parts of the economy.
Interesting. So. Where do you think it would have the biggest drawback?
Kids and allowance. Just weird stuff like that. How people are doing basic stuff.
Interesting.
So we'll see. Okay. You know, Facebook Marketplace, right? How are people going to deal?
What if Facebook's taking 0.5% on each transaction and the only way you can pay is with an electronic?
I think
people
will start bartering, right? You would.
I would. I would. I'm doing it right now. I've got a marketplace deal in the works.
There you go. Well, look, hey, in the last 30 seconds, Matt, this has been fun. Let's remind folks, how can they reach out to us?
Yeah, Little John Financial is the name. We do a lot of things when it comes to your money, whether it's an investment from inheritance to retirement accounts, all that good jazz. Give us a call or text us at 541-375-0898.
All right. Well, that's it. We're out of time for now. So thanks for tuning in as always. Again, Dave Littlejohn here.
Matt Dixon.
And you've been listening to True Wealth on News Radio 92.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.